The BBC presents My Music. A radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
Thank you. Hello again. Thanks to the great casting director up yonder, and I refer, of course, to Tony Schreier, our producer, the participants in My Music remain the same. Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden competing in musical knowledge against David Franklin and Frank Muir. In the first round this week, all the music's taken from films, although the films may have taken it from somewhere else in the first place. Ian Wallace, yours is straightforward film theme music. Film title, please, and an extra mark for the composer's name. A great opening to a film and a good opening to our show as well.
Yes, and you know, you played sufficient of it for my friend and I to have a bit of a conference.
Yes.
And to decide what we think is the correct answer. That the film is The Magnificent Seven.
One mark.
Which leads us to the composer, who is Leonard Bernstein.
No.
Oh.
You're only half right.
Elmer Bernstein.
Yeah, well, yes. Elmer Bernstein, no relation. Dennis.
I was very confident about that.
Let that be a lesson to you. Dennis, again, please, the film title and the composer.
Yeah, now, I never saw this film, but I've heard this piece of music play. It wasn't written specially for the film, was it?
No. And you could say that.
I'm an idiot.
I think that's a no. Yeah. No, I think it was possibly written just a year or two before the cinema. That's the feeling I have, you know. It sounds a bit pre-cinema to me.
Yeah.
Film and composer, then?
I don't know. I've heard it played, but I've never seen
with the composer of that music?
There's a lady mouthing.
Anything to do with the composer of that music?
Elvira Madigan.
Well, yes, but...
Yes. Bowie de Bowie.
One mark to the lady, none to you.
Yes, one mark to the lady.
The composer's name, you don't know.
I was told not to see it because I'd cry. Is that right?
Gesa Ander was playing that theme by Mozart that they used in Elvira Madigan. You don't get any marks, I'm afraid, at all. David, for you, music from a Stanley Kubrick production. You're getting some mimed help from the opposition, David, aren't you?
Yes. Mm. Well, if I can borrow a line from Dennis, well, I didn't see this film. But I do know the music.
Yes.
It's the intro to The Blue Danube.
That's one mark. Yes.
And I happened to get a very generous tip from Dennis, who mouthed a cue. And if A, he's being honest, and B, my lip reading is accurate, it's 2001.
Yes.
Is it?
Yes, 2001.
Good gracious.
How does the title go on? Or the subtitle, perhaps. 2001
no
A. Frank.
Well, 2001 Leagues Under the BBC.
Yeah. 2001 AD, isn't it?
Well, no. Well, it is, yes. But it's A Space Odyssey is the other half of the title.
I was actually miming a docking manoeuvre.
Yeah.
Very difficult to mime.
I thought you were squeezing a grapefruit.
I thought for one awful moment, I thought he was going to say The Clockwork Orange.
David gets a mark for the Blue Danube.
Frank, I was saying that.
Frank, I'll start you off with a hint, as I did for David. This is from the unfunniest film by the funniest man in films. At least that's what I think. Radio colleague of mine is in our audience, Bob Holness, is nodding his head at me. I think he's nodding that he's the funniest man in films, not that it's the unfunniest film. That's a matter of opinion.
Jack Tati.
Yes, Jack Tati. For which film?
Mon Oncle.
Yes. You've got two marks, Frank.
All right. Thank you. I've got two.
Here are some words used in the singing business, and I thought we'd find out what they mean. Ian, cantilena. What does that mean?
Sustained, flowing singing. I suppose you might, for want of a better word, call it legato singing.
Or sostenuto, yes. Literally a small song. At one time it referred to the uppermost part in a piece of choral music. It's also been used for a kind of solfeggio, but nowadays it indicates, as Ian suggested, smooth...
You're happy.
Smooth vocal writing or smooth vocal performance. Dennis, what is schwung?
What is what?
Schwung.
Schwung?
Yes.
In Germany, they used to have Schwing bands. And after they had played a number, the leader would say, "Gentlemen, you schwung good."
Which is actually correct, of course. It does mean swing. One out of two will do, I think. Swing, go, or vigor. In music, it's a great quality in the singing of, for instance, operetta.
Did you know that?
No.
David, where is your sternum?
Well, I'd find it much easier to demonstrate this. Would some lady from the audience care to come up? The sternum is the breastbone that's connected to the rib bones. The rib bone's connected to the thigh bones.
Now hear the word of the Lord.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much for 2 marks, David.
These words have something to do with singing.
Well, in an indirect sense, yes.
Ian, what do you do with your sternum when you sing?
I have no idea.
Well, don't fiddle with it.
I think one can get too tied up with technicalities in singing. I think you just open your cake hole and let it come out.
Frank, where might you find a Heldon tenor?
It's in the belfry of the Heldon Parish Church. In, hang on, there's a message coming through. In Wagnerian opera.
Yes. The right answer is always duller than the wrong one, isn't it? Always, yes.
Well,
yes,
what's he doing in Wagnerian opera?
Well, he's a hero tenor.
Who is he?
Tenore robusto, yes.
You learn a little something, didn't you?
Yeah. You get the mark, I think, yes. Now, seating myself comfortably on the piano stool, I'm going to play what musicians call middle eights. In other words, the middle bits of four well-known tunes. Give me the title, please, for a mark or for half a mark, just da-di-da or la-la, the main tune that follows where I leave off. But the title gets you a mark. Ian, here's yours. Title.
Cocktails for two. Oh, it's Spike Jones in his sooty slickers.
Yes, but you did la-la it, and I warned you not to, and you get half a mark for the la-la. It was cocktails for two. Dennis?
No, you can't count a as a la-la.
If I don't, you don't get half a mark.
You can, because on the telephone, if you ring Tim for the time, they always say at the third stroke it will be so-and-so, and they never do a stroke, they go... Now, if that is called a stroke, then can be a la-la.
A la-la, it can be. So it's title I'm after for a full mark, Dennis. Here's yours.
Absolutely on your own there, Dennis.
I'm not even on my own. I'm nowhere. That's completely foxed me.
Bing Crosby used to sing it. Da 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 da. Can't we be friends? It's a tune I thought you would know.
Right.
Yeah. See how David gets on. The title, please, David, of this, if you can.
Don't sit there drawing.
Hell, you know it.
I don't.
I can't keep dragging out of the mud.
Do you know it?
Of course I don't. Otherwise I would have told you. Da da da.
No. Audience, please. What's it called?
In a shady nook by a babbling brook.
Dennis, you knew. In a shady nook by a babbling brook. No,
well, don't help unless you're accurate.
Frank, title of this, please.
I don't know why I just...
Yes. I don't know why I love you like I do. Yes.
That's a marvellous sort of change in manners, that middle eight, because it goes, you never seem to want my romancing. The only time you hold me is when we're dancing. Whereas today, the only time the boy doesn't hold the girl is when they're dancing.
It's the truth. Yeah.
It's accessory time now, and that means I'm about to bring out from under my desk a musical object, something that all of us have seen before in orchestras, at concerts, and so on, but perhaps not, as it were, in isolation. I'm going to offer the first object to Dennis for him to tell me what he thinks it might be used for, and then to Ian for perhaps a more accurate answer. And then similarly with another object for Frank and David. Right, this first thing I have is a bit of brass tubing, rather curiously wrought. I think that's the expression. Dennis, I pass it to you and ask you what it is.
It's a bit of brass tubing. I would... overwrought would be the expression. It's actually of great historic interest and not something to be laughed at. It's part of one of those enormous metal musical instruments that people have wind round them in a kind of serpentine way and comes up the back of them over their heads. And it was with the one that belonged to Dr. Alfred Nobel, the man who founded the Nobel Prize, who also invented an explosive, as you know, and used to keep this big musical instrument in his workshop. And the day he invented this TNT... he left it in the workshop, and his assistant came in and thought it was metal polish and polished the instrument with it, put it to his lips, emitted an enormous blast, and this is the only bit that ever came down.
I'm pretty certain that it has some very vital task to perform when somebody's playing a French horn.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
I've seen people take those bits off.
Yes, that's right. It's one of the tuning slides of a French horn, and you get 2 marks and Dennis gets 2 marks as well. Jolly good. The other object that I've been storing under this desk is for Frank and David. Would you mind passing? Thank you. This, in shape, is rather like a bowl, a small bowl. It's made of rubber, and there's a small hole in the top. Frank, have you ever seen one before?
We use this for clearing drains.
Could be a pixie hood. It's a mute.
Really?
It goes, wah, wah, wah. The interesting thing about mutes is that they only came into use in the 18th century when...
He's off.
He's off.
When they started using brass instruments much more in orchestras, in the orchestral societies. And in fact, at that time, they only had one mute, which they had to pass rapidly from hand to hand on the brass section.
Clear, this, clear. Yeah.
They used to keep it steeped in a bucket of disinfectant. You can read about it in Gray's elegy in a country churchyard. They say, some mute in glorious Milton. Very early 18th century mute in rubber.
I think it is a thing that goes wah, wah, wah.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Wah, wah, wah.
But, for a what, David?
Goes inside a trombone bell?
Yes, that's right. What you do is you hold the trombone you hold the trombone to your lips with your left hand in the accustomed way. You put your hand, cut this over the bell, and you work it to and fro, open, close, open, close. It's a very familiar Glenn Miller effect. Do wah, do wah, do wah.
It's almost literal translation of the phrase softening the blow.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Thank you, gentlemen. Have it back for my collection.
Back to the museum.
Some general questions for you now. Ian, who wrote in his journal, God opens his door for a moment and his orchestra is playing the Fifth Symphony?
The Fifth Symphony... Well, there's a lot of people written a Fifth Symphony.
I haven't.
You will. You will, Oscar.
Plenty of time. Ian,
it wasn't Beethoven, obviously.
No, one thinks of Beethoven's Fifth, of course. I'll tell you the answer to this. You won't know it, but it's for any consolation. Frank won't know the answer to his either when it comes to his turn.
Do we get a mark for not knowing it?
No. Let's take a bye into the next round.
Yes, this remark, God opens his door for a moment and his orchestra is playing the Fifth Symphony. The man who uttered it was referring to his own Fifth Symphony, which makes it rather a remarkable statement. Sibelius said it in September 1914, of his own Fifth Symphony. Dennis, what began with a girl from Utah and ended with a centennial summer?
Oh, goodness, one of these devious questions you get. Centennial Summer was a rather dull musical film with Cornel Wilde that Otto Preminger directed. Mm-hmm. I can't remember a single song from it at all. Yeah. And I don't know anything about the girl from Utah.
So you're all very favourably placed on
I'm not on the whole, no. It couldn't be Sibelius again. Chancing his arm. No.
No, the answer is the composing successes of Jerome Kern. The Girl from Utah, 1914, included his first hit, They Didn't Believe Me. Centennial Summer was his last film score in 1945. So I can't give you any for that. David, there really are some strange names in opera, as you know. For instance, Giulietta has two lovers named Pitichinaccio, and, believe it or not, Schlemiel. Who, I may add, is in the power of the evil Dapertutto. Which familiar tune do they and the other guests sing at a party in Venice?
The Barcarolle.
From?
Tales of Hoffman.
Yes.
What's the impossible one? Come on, Steve.
Frank Muir. Who wrote and to whom? I am jumping about my room for joy. If it only turns out to be half as good as I believe it is, how pleased I shall be.
So it's from the preface to Genesis.
Is there anybody who thinks I shouldn't give him two marks for that? He's got two marks, hasn't he? The much less interesting answer is that it was Mendelssohn writing to Jenny Lind, and he'd finished part one of Elijah, actually. 1846. This last round, more or less by tradition, features the singing voices of our contestants. I thought just this week we'd launch them not with a cue line spoken by me or even with a few bars of piano. No, I thought, let's get them singing with a record, I thought. Ian left till last, as always. So, Dennis, prepare to come in singing, please, when the record cuts off.
Stopping
there. Yes. Oh, very good. 2 marks to you. Yes. John Hanson first, followed by Dennis Norden in full flight there. Well, pursuing the same sort of idea, again, part of a record, and then you will hear the singing voice of David Franklin.
Oh, Danny Bone. The pipes are cold.
The devil's got into you tonight, hasn't he? D for la grauch, T D storau di mardi gras. I find the original Gaelic very effective. I can't go on.
It's fine. Larkin. 2 months.
Who was that?
That was Tom Jones. Let's see how you get on, Frank, after this bit of singing.
Leather is tough, but Hannah's heart is tougher. She's a gal who loves to see a man suffer. Tease him and thrill him, to torture and kill him is her delight, they say.
Hard-hearted Hannah from the vamp from Savannah, G.A.
Yes. You didn't pick it up at the right place, though. I saw her at the seashore.
I saw the seashore with a great big can pouring water over a drowning man. Hard-hearted Hannah. Yes. The vamp from Savannah, G.A.
Yeah, good enough. 2 marks, yeah.
Ow!
Bobby Darin first, Frank Muir after. So to Ian, who wins his marks if he manages to come in singing when this record cuts out.
As I was going to Loganbury Fair, I met a dimpled dumpling with rose-red lips and raven hair and a turned-up nose to discompose and set resistance crumpling. We jogged along in a gusty throng that danced in gay disorder. My winsome maid in fancy braid and I at her side all countrified, toot-tooting my recorder. And I did say, I did sing, hey, ding-a-ding-ding, my beauteous buxom bonnie. And she did say, kind sir, good day, with a hey down derry and a sing cuckoo, and the summer is a-coming and a fa-la too, and a hey, nonny, 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 nonny.
Yes.
I'm afraid your ding-a-ding will be censored from the routine.
Ian finishing off his own record of Loganbury Fair and getting 2 marks. And that leads us to the end of the show. Victory by 4 marks. David Franklin and Frank Muir.
No.
Taking part in My Music were David Franklin, Frank Muir, Dennis Norden and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the program was produced for the BBC by Tony Shryan.